We all know Kit Kat bars taste delicious, but what about how they sound? It's not just a catchy jingle. It's the satisfying crack of breaking off a piece of Kit Kat, followed by a crisp crunch. Oh, we forgot one other sound that accompanies Kit Kat bars, too. It's... or maybe it's more like... Altogether, Kit Kat bars are music to our ears and yummy flavors to our mouths. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to Tour Life tonight, Tuesday, May 14th. And we got Yuli back on the show after his little European vacay. How's it going, brother?
It's good, man. I wasn't sure I'd be able to make it this week, too. I'd messaged you last week, and I'm like, dude, it might be 3 weeks. I won't be on here. But I ended up actually switching flights and coming home for a couple days. So
okay, nice.
I was able to, instead of having like the 7-hour flight from JFK to California, 2-hour flight home, stay here for a couple days, head out to OTB on Thursday. So it's nice, man. I got to sleep in my own bed last night and relax all day.
Yeah, so you're going out there on Thursday. I'm headed out there on Wednesday. Are you thinking going out and practicing is actually that beneficial at some of these courses?
Yeah.
For like 4 or 5 days?
I don't know. I've never been a 4 or 5 day practice guy. I usually dedicate like a day and then maybe get like 2 rounds in a day. But I think three rounds on one course is plenty.
Yeah.
I don't think four or five rounds really is going to help you that much, especially for me, I've played for so long. Most of these courses I've played multiple times there's subtle changes, but I don't need 5 rounds on these things.
A lot of times the rounds, I mean, the woods, I could see in the woods, you're trying to figure out exactly what disc and what angle to release it on for those like more particular lines. But when we get out in the open, it's more just landing areas, right? So it's not... Yeah. I don't know. It's just knowing where the OB is, knowing where not to miss, those type of things. And like you said, like the courses aren't really changing that much tournament to tournament, to where I don't feel the need to get out there on Monday to get a couple rounds in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
no,
you know?
No, I don't think so either. I think the most important thing with practice on a course, which I don't know if other people agree with me on this one, but it's getting my distances right. Mm. Like as long as my distances are right, I feel like I'm good. That's why I hate throwing a shot in practice and you get like a little nipper, even if it's a bad shot. You know what I mean? If it's a bad shot and it gets a little nipper, then I don't know how far it went and I can't gauge like my gameplay from then. Like I can even throw a bad shot. If it doesn't hit anything, I don't need to throw a good shot on the hole. You know what I mean?
You like, just want to see where your disc is going to end up.
Yeah, exactly. I can go to that bad shot because I know the flight I'm trying to make it fly. Mm-hmm. And I know that if I get the right turn, I can like, you know, okay, that was a little nose up and went left. If I get a turn on it, that adds 60, 70 feet. I know, you know, you get what I mean? Like I don't need to go out there and park every hole to know exactly what I need to do. And I feel like a lot of people think that way.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, before we get into tonight's episode, Saz, we have an ad read, right? Okay. Oh, perfect. All right. Yeah. So shout out to our friends at Manscaped. Hey there, beach babes. Are you ready to soak up those summer's vibes and unveil your ultimate beach bod? Well, you're in luck because our friends over at Manscaped have you covered from head to toe with the Performance Package 5.0 Ultra. This ultimate all-in-one grooming kit is set to have you looking and feeling your best in the summer sun. Trust Manscaped and unlock the confidence you need to turn heads this season. Join the 10 million men worldwide who trust manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with code TOURLIFE. Let's make this summer your smoothest one yet. Embrace your summer bod goals with all our inclusive performance packages 5.0. Perfect for those aiming for that crisp, clean, and confident look. The updated Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra Grain. Ultra groin and body hair trimmer got a summer makeover. It's waterproof, designed to splashy pool parties and beach hangouts. Keep your ears and nose as tidy as your hedges next door with our Wedge Weed Whacker 2.0 ear and nose hair trimmer. Pesky hair be gone. Post trim care never felt so good with the the Crop Soother Ball Aftershave Lotion. Say goodbye to painful chafing and hello to all day comfort. For those sunny beach days, don't leave home without the Crop Preserver anti-chafing ball deodorant. Let the sun see the shine, not sweat. Our magic mat disposable shaving mats got your back and front and everything else that needs grooming. It's like having a magician in your bathroom. Surprise! Your purchase comes with free Boxers 2.0 Midnight Bravo. Comfort and style that fit like a dream. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code TOURLIFE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code TOURLIFE at manscaped.com. Saz, do you write that ad?
No.
Do you put some of those little things in there?
You know what? I wish I was that clever.
I think that
maybe Silas should be reading the ads. Because he puts them in there, right? So he's already ready.
Silas, are you ready for that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down. I'm down to do it.
He comes on like the overcom guy at Price is Right. Yeah. All right, ladies.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen.
Manscaped. Oh, man. All right, so this week was an off week for me, but was not an off week for a lot of players, including yourself, Yuli. You decided to head over the seas and make your way for the Copenhagen Open. I kind of said that you were probably one of the few reasons people were paying attention to that tournament in the United States. I didn't really hear too much chatter from, you know, the social medias that I pay attention to and from the people that I talk to about disc golf. I think you were the reason a lot of people were tuning in to kind of see how you would do, kind of similar to how Paul McBeth did last year with the European Tour events. But kind of give me the breakdown, what your thoughts are on the Copenhagen Open and how it went and all that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had planned on going a while back. KJ had reached out to me and said, hey, man, you should come play the Copenhagen Open. We could run a few clinics out here and make you feel real welcome and stuff. And so that was one of the main reasons I went out there. The clinics went amazing. We sold out of every one of them. We only did two because it was kind of a short week for me, right? I flew in. I got there Tuesday, ran a clinic Tuesday, ran a clinic Wednesday. Had a chill day Thursday and then played the tournament. The tournament, though, shout out to everybody who went to the clinic too. I mean, these guys were super excited about the clinics and everything, and it was an absolute treat to go out there and do that. And thank you to KJ Dis for hooking that up. But tournament was it was good. I mean, the crowds were awesome. Obviously, the crowds in Europe are always good. The course was kind of like a classic course. You know, it was everything that I expected it was going to be over there. Classic course, shorter shots here and there. A lot of like short par fours, right? Like play have to be exact with your little placement shot off the tee, and then you don't have that much into the green. So it was a lot different. It reminded me a lot of like what an Idlewild is, right?
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, and I've always said, I feel like there is a place for that on the tour. Did it give me Elite Series vibes? No, it gave me European vibes. And there's two different things. Like when I go to the European Championship, I don't get like major vibes. I get European vibes still. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Yeah. Like when I go to the USCGC, that's like a major to me. Maybe it's because when I first started, I went there and I had these crazy feelings and everything. And it was the first really good tournament. Worlds gives me a different feeling as well.
Does that have anything to do with the actual field, or are you just saying with like the pageantry of the tournament tournament?
I would say the pageantry, like,
okay.
I don't know. Not a lot of people have ever always gone over to the European Open. You know what I mean? So for 10 years, we would go over there and there'd be like 15 guys. Now, what is there, 20 guys? It's not that different, really, when you think about it. You know what I mean? Like our fields here, most of the time, are stronger than the European Open even. How many did we have go over there last year?
I think it was somewhere in the 20 range, yeah. But you're still missing a lot of the top 20 players, right? It's like,
yeah.
We're pulling 5 or 10 guys out there that aren't really, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting the top 10 guys, which is what you need at majors, sure. Right? But you're not getting like that Elite Series field. It's just not happening. Mm-hmm. The talent's growing over there. It always has. We know that. I think that the talent level since I first started going over to the European tournaments is crazy. Like young people who can finally putt, like that was a big thing. I remember going over to Europe and being like, these guys are the best I've ever seen off the tee, but they can't make it.
They can't putt.
They can't putt. Now they can. So Elite Series, I didn't get that feeling, but I don't get that feeling when I go over really to the major either. It's like a whole different vibe to me, if that makes sense.
No, it does. Yeah.
Certainly does. Which is good. I like it better. I think that if the Elite Series had that same vibe here, I think it would be better. Honestly, 100%.
What were they doing differently over there that
it's
you
just
think
more professional? Always, it's just more professional. You know, like you, like it's little things. Like I had my host who was with me, and this was a bummer, but we were going out there, and I was like, "Yeah, throw a couple shots with me." You know what I mean? Three holes in, he got a call, and the tournament director or somebody out there was like, "Hey, you can't practice the course. What are you doing?" You know what I mean? So a little more strict with those things. The crowds,
the rules are regulated and like they actually follow them.
Yes. It's like, I would say a little more professional without somebody being like, okay, you have to do this. You have to do that. You know what I mean? Even the crowds are better. They love it. I don't know. It's a different atmosphere as far as what we're used to here in the States. And that's not knocking anything here at the States. And it might be a little bit of like, that's just like the feelings that I have always gotten from there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But of course the field was weaker.
Certainly.
But like I said, I don't see why that has been a big deal at all. If there's going to be tournaments over there, it's going to be tough for the field from the States to travel all the way over there. How many people come from Europe to travel here?
It's completely, it's completely a different product for sure. To try to, you know, look at a tournament over in Europe and compare it to a tournament over in the United States. I mean, I think that is something that is completely fair. I saw some people kind of, you know, getting a little upset about people wanting to put an asterisk next to a win, being like, well, it wasn't a full field. And it's like, that is fair. Like that, at the end of the day, when you're talking about sports, that is going to happen. People are going to look at who did you actually beat? Who was there? I mean, something that Jeremy Colling is going to have to, you know, his name is going to go down in history as he is a major champion winner, but it was only a 3-day event. Like that is just the facts. It's not trying to take anything away from him. That is just an argument that people are going to have to be like, well, we don't know what would happen, right? Colt Montgomery, he won at Waco. Paul was charging. We don't know what would have happened if there would have been a third day and not two rounds there. So those are all things. I think it's fair. I think it's completely fair for some people
100%
to have that, that feeling and that question too, of like, should those points over there be equivalent to the points in the States? Like, should that tournament have the same point, you know, breakdown or output as an event that has a much deeper field? Like, that, those are things that the Disc Golf Pro Tour need to figure out. And I think if they want the European Tour to be successful, because you, I was actually, that makes a lot of sense of why you went it over, went over there. You had other things going on to entice you to go over there. I don't think a one-off event like that is going to entice a lot of people to go over there unless it's a major.
I'll tell you this much. I've been looking at the other ones because I want to go back. I don't. Here's another thing.
But you're not going to be fly back, are you?
Yeah, I probably will.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Here's another thing, though. As far as like a win isn't as good as the other, like people have the option to go over there and play.
Sure.
The title's up for grabs. Mm-hmm. And in 20 years, nobody's going to know. It's just going to be like, this guy won the tournament. In 20 years, nobody's going to know.
Yes and no. I mean, I think it might be small enough tournament that people might not even like think about it. But like majors, 100% people remember when like certain weird things happened at majors. Like they'll be like, oh my gosh, that was when blah, blah, blah blew up and that guy ended up winning it. There will be historians that will remember stuff, but I agree with you. Like this event, for the most part, unless he goes on to have a credible career and win more and more and more, yeah, he'll go down as, you know, winning an elite event. I mean, are we even still calling him elite event?
We all know Kit Kat bars taste delicious, but what about how they sound? It's not just a catchy jingle. It's the satisfying crack of breaking off a piece of Kit Kat, followed by a crisp crunch. Oh, we forgot one other sound that accompanies Kit Kat bars, too. It's, or maybe it's more like, altogether, Kit Kat bars are music to our ears and yummy flavors to our mouths. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
I don't even know what they're calling. They changed the name so many times that it's tough. You know, it's tough to like actually know exactly what it's even called. But we haven't even said Jesse Nieminen. That's
Nieminen. Yeah.
Nieminen. Shout out to him though for winning. He actually played really, really well. And it was funny. We were talking about this earlier. And people were like, well, no one's going to like have any idea of like how well he actually played because these people. And I was like, oh, just look at the rating. And one of the people did not get my sarcastic joke about looking at the rating for that. But yeah, like you said, everyone in the States that is very good at disc golf, that has a tour card, could have gone over there and played if they wanted to. They decided not to. He beat everyone that was at the tournament.
So that's all you can ask for. Like,
yeah.
Now I can tell you this much. If the whole tour was over there, the scores would have been different. And could that have been the winning score? It would have been close. Mm. But like for I can only say how I played.
Top 10 would be a lot different. That's for sure.
Yeah. Like how I played. I thought that the 13, 14 under was going to be like the normal.
Oh,
like when we first started the tournament. And so I shot
per 10 round, you said.
Yeah. Like I thought somebody could have gone 15, 16 under par there.
Gotcha.
Honestly, the winds were a little bit here and there, but you could have gotten on fire and really done damage. So I do think the scores would have been lower, but he also wasn't forced to really, he shot the 13 under, which was, that would have been one of the best rounds for sure. And then the final round, he really wasn't being pushed that much to play better than he could have, I think. So he was playing at a level to, if the whole tour was there, he would have been on lead card.
It was interesting to hear what he said too, because he was talking about how coming down the stretch, and this is where I think it could be a little bit different, right? Is because he was talking about how he has been in this position before. Like there's been times where he has been in a winning position or could be in a winning position coming down the stretch, and he's never been able to put it together. And he said again, like he had those same thoughts at this event. And that's where I was like, it could be a lot different if you have a Calvin Heimberg breathing down your throat, if you have a Ricky Wysocki breathing down your throat, if you have a Gannon Burke, you know, if those guys are breathing down your throat, that's probably a little bit different. So maybe he was feeling a little bit more comfortable with the people chasing him.
Well, Nicholas is that guy in Finland. Like
sure.
No, there's no sure. Like Nicholas is like a top.
No,
player in the world, and in Finland, like, he wins everything.
No, I know he's
he puts that fear. Like, here's the thing. Like,
I'm just saying, you have more people. You don't have just one person that you have to eye and say, I got to watch out for this guy. Like, we've seen it. Like, you have to be worried about people on chase card. You have to be worried about people that aren't even on your own card.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
That was the only point I was making.
But I'm just saying, like, with Nicholas, like, the Finnish people
think he's going to win every event.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so then he was the one that got second and was pushing him the whole time. Mm-hmm. So you got to give some validity to that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, again, there were solid players out there. It wasn't like he went and played a local event and beat a bunch of local pros. There were solid players out there. But it is like, I'm just saying, if you want to put an asterisk or you want to talk about, the field, you can.
You can.
Yeah, you can.
The field's not as good, but like I said, the Pro Tour made this an elite series. It made the points the same, and I was actually really surprised more people didn't go over there.
I don't think I was. I don't. The one and done just doesn't really do it for me. Like, I don't see.
It's expensive. One of the things. It's pretty expensive.
It's also a lot of traveling for one turn. To me, if they really want the European tournaments to take off, you got to be able to like pin them around the major. Two events before the major, two events after the major. There you go. You got a five tournament.
I also think it's important to do that to grow it globally, like the Elite Series globally. Like, you have to do that. You have to have a couple tournaments. So you can't just have major championships in your overseas. That's crazy.
You got to first have them. You got to first have them around the thing that's going to draw the people over there. Like, that's, you got to have something to get people over there and be like, oh yeah, and you got to slowly build it out. That's what I'm saying. This might've been a little bit too quick. If they were thinking like a bunch of Americans were going to go over there, it might've been a little too quick for them to expand the way they did. Because I think last year people went over before the European, a lot more people went over the week before the European Open to play Sula. And now it looks like a lot of people are staying a week after to play the Estonian championships, right? So it's like, that makes sense. That kind of growth. It is a small field, but like, I think that's the growth, is you like build it out from the major and not, you know, again, if they were just like, hey, we want to have a European event and give points here and whatever, then that's fine. If they want to have maybe a bigger presence of Europeans at the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championship at the end, that also makes sense.
But why do that? But okay, so then why does it, my question is, why does it matter? Like, why not put a tournament somewhere, put the money up, put the points up? Why does it matter that everybody was like, oh, that's too much travel for me? Like, that's a silly excuse to me if you're a professional disc golfer. Like, if you have the means to go over there and play a tournament, that's on you. You get what I mean?
No, I get it, but it's like saying, you got to think too, there is a majority of the tour that don't travel by air. And so it'd be like saying, okay,
who cares? Like,
well, think about how bad the tour would be, Yuli, if we had an event in Florida and then next week we had an event in California and then next week we had an event in New York and then we had an event in Oregon. That tour would not be good. If you're trying to build a tour and have the best players go to every event, the way that the landscape of where disc golf is right now, that just would not be a good tour doing that, bouncing back and forth. You would have look how long it took for Chris Dickerson to start traveling, right? Like, it's just a slow.
But that's what I'm saying. I have a hard time getting behind something like that because of like convenience to a player. Like in golf, there's tournaments that are like, that like travel and do this thing, but you can also go and play like other tournaments that are kind of far away.
Yeah, no, I mean, golf is a good example for sure. But if you look at the smaller tours, which I think are more where disc golf is, as far as finances, money, eyeballs, all that, if you look at smaller tours, like I can pull up the Korn Ferry schedule here.
But that's not a good example to me.
Wait, why not?
Because it's not the top dog. It's not the top dog.
Yeah,
Brody.
But Korn Ferry.
No. You can go play C tiers every single weekend mile away.
I think Korn Ferry is a better example of where disc golf is.
No, that's not where the best players go, Brody.
I mean, I can pull up the I was saying is I can pull up the PGA Tour schedule as well. The only thing I was saying is I think the Korn Ferry is a closer representation of like the money that those players have, the resources that those players have versus, I mean, the right. PGA Tour, you have people flying private.
But if the PGA Tour said, okay, this weekend we're going to Switzerland.
Yep.
There would be a bunch of guys who went over there, and the people who didn't, nobody would care. They'd be like, yeah, he could have gone and he didn't.
Yes. And that happens even on the PGA Tour. Yes. Guys pick and choose tournaments. And obviously with LIV and stuff, people want to see the best tournament, the best people at the tournaments. Like that's you
100%.
You want to see all top 30 guys in the world play a tournament. You don't want to see five of the top 30 guys play a tournament. And if you have five of the top 30 guys playing a tournament, you need to ask yourself, why is that? Why do we only have five of the top 30 coming here? And try to figure that out, because for the tour to be successful and for an event to be successful, and this European event very well could have been successful, but it would have been a lot more successful if you would have had 10 or 15 of the top 30 guys in the world there.
Well, it's also the first time that they've done it really like this. Sure. So it's going to take those types of things. And I think now watching Niemann win, more people maybe next year will be like, maybe I should go over there and get some more points. Like this was a perfect opportunity for somebody like a Hebenheimer to be like, okay, I'm going to save my money and I'm going to go over there and I'm going to get the points, or even let's say somebody else.
But
and I have a chance that if I play one tournament in a good tournament, I could have my tour card for next year.
We might. I mean, you see that with USDGC qualifying, right? You see guys that are playing in these dark horse tournaments that no one's ever heard at because they have USDGC qualifying for sure. I don't know, because the USDGC qualifying makes a lot more sense. Cause it's like, if I go to this tournament and I play well, I can get my qualifier into USDGC, right? One, the cost of doing that's probably not nearly as expensive as it is to fly over to Europe. And then two, obviously too, like just going over to Europe is already, think about who we have on tour, Yuli, too.
I normally am the one
that doesn't side with the people we have on tour. And I don't, you know, but I am right now saying like, we have some people that I don't know if I would feel comfortable with them just being out in society, like being able to know how to operate. So to like think some people like just being like, oh, I'm just going to buy a plane flight and go over. I mean, we talked about on the show last week, look at like Cole Rodalin, like that type of behavior. We have a lot of people like that on tour that like do stuff like that. Do we feel comfortable having that guy just drop themselves in Europe and try to figure out how to get off an airplane and get to the hotel?
That's what I did when I was their age. Well, not their age. I was a little older, but I mean, the first time
you might be better off. I'm saying there are a lot of people like that. And to think that, like, let's go through their head. They're like, dude, it's so hard. They're probably thinking, all right, it is so hard for me to like even figure out how to get gas and get to the next tournament in the United States. Do I really want to try to figure out how to get a passport, how to get through customs?
Yeah. Oh man, like last year,
all the signs are in a different language.
Matt went with me, remember? And he was like, I was at Pete Cashin's house with him. And he's like, oh, you're going over there? And I'm like, yeah, that's why I'm staying here. I'm flying out. And he's like, I think I'm flying out the same day. Can I go with you? Like, he's like, please don't leave me in the airport. This guy's stuck by my side all the way over there. He didn't have a ride to the course. He didn't know where the course was. He was like, I'm just winging it. I'm like, Maddie, you can't just wing it going over there, bro.
Yeah, there might be. Yeah, there might be a culture shift, right? There, like 10, 15, 20 years, there might be a culture shift. But like right now, we still have guys that are posting on Facebook, you know, pages asking, hey, can I crash on anyone's couch? Like yeah, but, just random people's houses, you know?
That's my point. Like eventually something like this has to happen. Like I hope that there's still like three, I don't think there should be 10 tournaments over there, but 3-4 tournaments in a different sure. country for the tour is a good thing. And if people yeah. don't want to go over there and do it, like I don't feel bad. Like I don't think they should change something of that. Like here's another thing. Like they're just going to put, they took three tournaments and put them over there. Are they going to fit them in our schedule here? Like it's a total choice. You know what I mean?
That's what, in my opinion, that's what it should be. It should be like nothing is happening in the States, which to be fair, this past weekend, there was nothing happening yeah. in the States. There was no Disc Golf Pro Tour event in the States. And I think if you couple it, if you do like, hey, there's gonna be no events in the States for 3 weeks and we're gonna have three back-to-back tournaments over in Europe, I think you yeah. would get a lot more people to go and do that.
The one-off is tough.
The one-off's off.
It is tough.
Yeah, you're probably exhausted. Andrew Mills says sponsors could pay for flights. I think you could also say sponsors maybe even pay for like a chaperone. someone to like walk some people around.
I'm agreeing with you while saying it was over there.
Yeah.
And there's a choice to do it.
Oh,
and
for
if
sure.
if you don't do it, like I don't want to hear those people be like, well, there's an asterisk because
I don't think it's those people. I think it's just fans. I think it's just fans being like,
yeah, that's going to be everywhere.
Yeah. It's AB be, was it there. Should, AB would have won. Yeah. Look, you're going to have people
be.
Say that.
It should
yeah.
be for sure.
Yeah. Evelina took down the FPO side in a playoff. FPO is going to be hurt really bad here. I think, these next couple weeks are going to be tough for FPO. Because it's just a complete split of the tour. Yeah. Like you, we'll see. I don't.
Back to Evelina really fast.
Sure.
Go watch the last hole in the playoff. Fire, dude.
Is it?
I'm telling you right
was
now.
Was it that par six?
I'm saying go watch the playoff and the last hole. It's sick.
Is that out on Jomez yet or what?
Jomez wasn't there, but MDM or something like that. I just followed them.
MDG.
MDG has great coverage of the tournament.
We all know Kit Kat bars taste delicious, but what about how they sound? It's not just a catchy jingle. It's the satisfying crack of breaking off a piece of Kit Kat followed by a crisp crunch. Oh, we forgot one other sound that accompanies Kit Kat bars, too. It's... Or maybe it's more like... Altogether, Kit Kat bars are music to our ears and yummy flavors to our mouths. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
If you want to go watch it, it's
well,
good.
You're probably just saying that because you're on the freaking thumbnail.
No, it's good.
All right, I have that loaded. I'll watch that at the end. Frank says she was down 9 strokes final round and came back to win. Her stepper on the playoff hole was amazing. All right, I'll go check that out. Shout out to MDG Media.
It was good. I think that was like the highlight of the whole tournament. Not to take anything away from Nieminen because he played amazing, but like it was cool, man.
Nice. All right, let's talk about the Las Vegas Challenge real quick. I don't really like talking too much about tournaments that aren't on tour. That's not what this podcast is about. This podcast isn't about random A tiers and B tiers and C tiers all over the place. It's about the tour. But real quick, Connor Rock took it down 39 under. Gannon Burr got second at 38 under. And then Calvin Heimberg got third at 34 under. This did look like a lot of players were, you know, it makes a lot of sense. You're going from Emporia out to California already for OTB. Mm-hmm. LA or Las Vegas is right in the middle. Let me just stop in, play for some money, and then keep on going. So the field actually was a pretty solid field. Shout out to Connor Rock. Played really, really good out there. There is this hilarious photo. I have I feel like the last time we pulled a photo.
Hey, let me say this real quick. It sounds like if the tour goes over, Nieminen would have smoked them anyway.
Oh, really?
Calvin and Gannon getting beat by Connor Rock?
Yeah. Some can say that.
Unless Connor goes over there.
That's where we can all. If Connor
goes over there, then I'll say something different. But that's what.
That's where we can say. that's where we can start like having speculation about everything.
Yeah.
Stas, you got this photo to show the people. I feel like last time it was Emerson again that we had a photo like this of where the depth perception was weird. But yeah, I saw that on Reddit or Facebook or Twitter. Someone sent, I don't know. I saw that somewhere and I was like, I got to share that. It's Gannon just looking like he's 8 feet tall. Coincidence that we had a bunch of people decide to play in a tournament that wasn't on tour. And we see 5 rounds over 1075 rated this past weekend. Gannon Burr, 1086. Calvin, 1082. Gannon again, 1081.
Good Connor, snag, that's for sure.
Connor, 1080. Bradley Williams, 1080. Is that a shocker to anyone that we really haven't seen any 10? If you want me to take the blindfold off your eyes so that you guys can all see how stupid ratings are and want me to take the blindfold off and tell you that ratings are dumb, and if you want good ratings, don't go on tour. Like, if you want me to take the blindfold off, when have we seen a bunch of 10-8 rated rounds this year? Maybe 1-2? I mean, we'll get Edwin. We get Edwin's stats on it to let us know.
No, Austin. I think it was Austin.
AB maybe had one.
Yep, and Gannon, too.
But having 5 guys, I mean, Connor Rock, Bradley Williams, love the guys, but they have not gotten close to shooting 1080 rated rounds this year, I don't think. So, take the blindfolds off, and let's burn these ratings down to the ground. So I posed a question on Twitter, and I was quite surprised with some of the responses I got. Now, I posed this question because I saw a comment. The comment was from a Facebook post, I think on Disc Golf. Oh, here we go. Edwin Stats. I don't bring ratings into my data set as I know they piss Brody off. I would have to pull directly from the PGA site. Oh, Edwin already knows. So I think this was on Disc Golf Fanatics Facebook. Popped up on my, algorithm homepage, and the top comment was, this was him posting about Owen Scoggins winning the Santa Cruz Masters Cup. Okay. Picture of Owen winning it. And the top comment was, whenever a pro player wins a lower tier event, it's shameful, men or women. And that got 32 replies. And obviously I did not click to see all the different replies. So obviously this guy was like, I don't like pros jumping in these local events, lower tier events and winning. So I went to Twitter and I said, should pros be allowed to play in off tour events? Should touring pros, I made sure I said touring pros or tour. I think I said, what did I say? Silas, can you pull that up? Did I say tour card pros? I said something to try to make sure that we're talking about pros that are on tour.
Right.
This golf pro tour. Should they be allowed to play in local events? And I was actually kind of surprised with the overwhelming amount of yeses. A lot of people saying yes, yes, yes.
So you said, should tour card pros be allowed to play in non-tour events?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Should tour card pros be allowed to play in non-tour events? There was a handful of people that said no, but overwhelmingly a lot of people said yes. And then a lot of people like, and this is what I find fascinating. And this is why like Twitter, this is why I like having a podcast, because we can talk out our thoughts. Because Twitter, you just have people reading that and being like, Brody, you're a freaking idiot. This take sucks. Of course they should be allowed to be play.
Yeah.
It's like, I wasn't having a take. I was literally asking a question. But when you ask questions like that, people will take it the way they, people will take it this way. Some people will take it that way.
Well, it comes down to the one take about like C tiers not mattering and everything. And then there's a lot of people in there, which I had never heard before, being like, you're taking away money from other people, and you're it's like a bat. You're like you're a bagger. That's the first time I've ever heard of a pro being a bagger. But yeah, it's a real thought. It's a real thought people have. And it got me thinking. I was like, dang, that's kind of like a good point. Like, is that a thought that other pros have? Like, why is this guy playing in my event? Like, he doesn't need the $200. Like, that's for the locals. You know what I mean? And this I was like, where... at least there's merit. There's like some sort of merit behind the thought process. You know what I mean?
No, and this is where my voting take goes, of where I don't vote on stuff that I don't care about, right? Like, if it doesn't, if I don't care if it goes this way or this way, why should I vote? The people that should vote are the ones that are like, this is going to drastically change my life. This is going to drastically change my life. Those are the people that should vote on the matter. Right? Because it infects them. And so the idea of like someone saying, the person that's voting and saying, yes, of course, like I would love to have the chance of having Yuli randomly on my card. That would be incredible. That'd be insane. Sure. That makes a lot of sense. But what about the guy that's like, hey, I'm playing in these local events, trying to get enough money to be saved up to where then I can play in bigger events and travel and maybe make it on tour.
Right.
Like, why was that? Like, we have to think about what that guy thinks too.
100%.
And, you know, Calvin, Gannon, these guys going, I mean, Connor Rock's on tour too. He's a touring pro. All these guys going to Las Vegas Challenge and knocking all these local guys down that probably, you know, would have won or gotten whatever, a lot more money. Like, shouldn't those people matter too of like what they think should be happening?
Well, this happens in other sports as well. Like, I don't think PGA players aren't allowed to play other events because they're contractually obligated to the tour.
Yeah. So, people get confused by this. So they do play events off tour, yes, but they are still like in a high tier class. Mm-hmm. They're not going and playing in like a Sunshine State tournament. Or if they have if they have status. They're not playing Corn Ferry Tour. Yep. They're not playing these local tours either if they have status. Now, that doesn't count as like a member guest or like some of these charity or those.
Yes.
We're talking about like tour to tour, like the
tour to tour.
If we want to look at it, the Corn Ferry Tour is A tiers and the Pro Tour is the PGA Tour. Like, if we want to look at like comparison wise, that's what those is. And so you're not going to see PGA Tour guys drop down and play Corn Ferry for events. They're just not, if they have status, they can't do that.
Which I think isn't, I don't know exactly, but I'm pretty sure we can play Silver Series events, but we don't get points or something like that. I don't think we should be allowed to play a Silver Series.
Yeah, I don't.
If you have a tour card, I don't think you should be allowed to go to the Cascade Challenge and play. Because it's a tour dedicated to other people trying to come up and get a spot. You know what I mean?
Marcos is bringing up an interesting point. He says, if you're an open player playing on your home course, shooting 12 to 14 down, you shouldn't have a problem playing against a pro. Or is it a good gauge for those people like, holy crap, I just got my butt handed to me. I need to practice a little bit more before I decide to go on tour. This is where like exposure, I think, will slowly kind of happen, right? Like, I don't need to have LeBron James beat me in basketball to know that I'm not that good at basketball.
Yeah.
I don't need Tiger Woods to beat me in golf to know that I'm not good at golf. I don't need Ronaldo to beat me in soccer to know that I'm not good at soccer. Like, there is going to be this idea. And this is where like Ultimate Frisbee, I always talked about this. Ultimate Frisbee didn't have that exposure that these other sports had. If you go and watch someone shoot a basketball and their form is janky as heck and they're not making the shot, you can be like, they're not really good at shooting a basketball. Like, you know what, how good players shoot about you have that understanding. There were a lot of people in Ultimate Frisbee that were the best player in that little town, in that little league. And so everyone thought, like, this guy is awesome. And so everyone would look at that person and get advice and do and in grand scheme of things, that person was trash. That person was teaching all the wrong things. And that's really hard to do in other sports because the exposure is there to where if you play your local basketball league and you have the best player, you're still looking at that guy and being like, that guy's not actually that good at basketball. We just all suck worse. Like, we're all bad.
He's just
a little bit better than everyone. And so I think that exposure, to answer your question, Marcos, I think that exposure will continue. And another way to get rid of that idea of like, holy crap, is again, ratings, because ratings are terrible. Because you can go out to your pitch and putt course, play a par three tournament, shoot 10, 20 rated, and think you could beat Yuli in a tournament. Like, that's why ratings are bad, is because they don't do a good job of saying like your skill level. Like, you think in your head, like, I'm shooting 1,000 plus, right? So.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, because it also takes away from like the person. And I've said that this is one of my biggest knocks on ratings. It takes away from the person itself. Like, you go to a number instead of just like what this person's accomplished, who he is, all those things. Like, imagine I go to a local B tier and I get throttled by 10 shots by, let's make up a name.
Martin Joe Schmo.
And he beats me. Then you look at the ratings and you go, okay, blah, blah, blah. And let's say I shoot like 980 the whole time and he beats me by 10. And they're like, oh yeah, Yuli didn't play good. Like, that's a silly thing.
Yeah.
If you take away ratings completely and then you just see that this dude throttled me, all of a sudden they're like, oh, he beat Yuli. That's good. Mm-hmm. You get what I mean? So it takes that into perspective. Oh, well, Paul's a good player. This guy beat him by 10. This guy must have played really good. You get what I mean? But yeah, when you have ratings, then you go into this like detailed thing. Well, he didn't even play to his potential.
See, to me, the ratings is just a lazy way. If we have better statistics, I would much rather look at that and be like, oh, wow, Yuli went 4 of 20 inside the circle. Like, he had a really bad putting week.
Yep.
That's why he didn't play well.
But
right.
But then it's even exactly if it's better than that. And I actually am solid across the board in all kinds of statistical analysis. And then this guy's like beat me. Yep. Then people be like, damn, this guy played good. Who is this guy? Mm-hmm. You know, and then the exposure is better for that person.
Yeah. The ratings, I just always hate them. So perfect segue into talking about Kristen Tatar, the first FPO player ever to reach 1,000.
Hey, you said this is the only rating that you cared about.
Yep.
We all know Kit Kat bars taste delicious, but what about how they sound? It's not just a catchy jingle. It's the satisfying crack of breaking off a piece of Kit Kat followed by a crisp crunch. Oh, we forgot one other sound that accompanies Kit Kat bars too. It's, or maybe it's more like, altogether, Kit Kat bars are music to our ears and yummy flavors to our mouths. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
It is. And I think the fact that she's done it has literally now put to bed FPO ratings for me. I could care less. I couldn't care less about FPO ratings. This was very similar to.
Let me ask you a question. Because this is a funny one for me, because I'm not a ratings guy. We both agree on that. I think they should be gone from the Pro Tour. I don't think they should be a thing. But you know what I do like chasing? An 11 hundo. Like, that's still kind of sweet to me. I think 1100 is kind of sweet to me. If you go to a tournament and you shoot an 1100, would you be more impressed with the score you shot? Or would you be kind of happy that you had an 11 hundo in the bag? Like, there's some sort of
thing that's so stupid about that, Yuli, is it has to be so manufactured. It has to be the right course.
I got it, but I'm asking a question.
Bad players there.
Let's say there's good players there. I don't care how it's done, but you get an 11 hundo. You would be pretty proud of the 11 hundo, right?
I don't think I would.
You don't say, dude. Come on.
I don't. I literally do not care. I literally do not care about ratings, because here's the problem with ratings.
It's kind of a cool thing.
I've seen so many people play well. They'll shoot a good round.
Yeah.
And then they'll look at their phone and look it up, and then they get bummed. And I'm like,
Yeah. No,
bro, you shot a great round.
I'm with you. What about this? Because we don't have this thing, because we don't have like a set par to our game. Like in golf, 50s is like the thing, right? You shoot in the 50s. That's incredible.
Insane. Yeah.
It's nuts. I think 1100 is our 50s in a way, because it is hard to do. And that's the only reason why. The only thing that I ever look at is like 1100 sick. That's all.
I could see that, because there definitely are, like, that's where the similarities to me count a little bit. If you're judging like that high rating like that to the score in golf, because there are certain courses where you're like, no one is shooting in the 50s.
Yeah.
Right. Like there's no shot anyone's ever going to shoot in the 50s on this course. Which is the same. And again, that's why ratings are dumb. Because you should be able to shoot an 1100 rated round anywhere. It shouldn't matter.
Impossible.
And there are some courses that it's impossible to. That makes no sense to me. So yeah, I think that's a good, little rating rants there. But shout out to Kristen. She got, again, she's pushing the needle forward. She's like the Caitlin Clark
of
women's basketball, pushing the game forward, getting in news media outlets, getting talked about all over the place. Very, very well done. Well-deserved accomplishment. I'm glad it was her being the first one, right? Like I think she has shown a level of professionalism over these last couple of years. She has pushed the game, and we are now seeing others follow suit. So I think it's awesome to see. And I think that's it. I don't think I've got anything else for ratings anymore for FPL or MPO. I think I'm done.
Not even an 11 hundo here and there. That's kind of cool.
No, I'm done. You can't bring me back from that.
I almost got you. I almost got you in there with the
11. Congrats to Kevin Jones. Kevin Jones is an engaged man.
Congratulations.
Got engaged this past week. Awesome to see. Congratulations, Kevin. To you and your missus. Also, to those people, it wasn't you, Yuli, but there were people on debate night trying to tell me that Paul Macbeth has gotten worse and Ricky has gotten worse, and that's why their ratings are dropping, because they're getting old. Scott Stokely just threw an 86 mile per hour forehand.
That's so wild, man.
Last I checked, he is a little bit older than those guys that I just listed. Yeah. Ricky, Paul. This idea, the people that have this idea that, oh, when you get to that, you know, oh my God, when you start getting 32 in disc golf, like you're idiots. You're dumb. Stop saying that. You can be competitive in disc golf for a long time.
Yeah.
This idea that, like, as long as AB stays healthy, as long as Calvin stays healthy, as long as they don't have any major injuries, those guys, as long as they work at their game and continue to push, those guys should be competitive for a very long time. Now, could there be a new crop of player coming in and doing stuff, and AB and Calvin say, I'm set in my ways, I'm not going to do that, I'm not going to learn that new skill, I'm not going to try to advance my game, and they get left behind? 100%. But AB and Calvin have all this talent, all this skill in the world. Gannon, you can throw him in there. We could throw a couple other people in there. I just don't see those guys hitting the age of 30 like we do in baseball, like we do in football, like we do in some of these other sports where they hit a certain age, right? Guys that are in major league pitchers, like they hit it at a certain age and their fastball is just a little bit gone.
Listen, I had an interview this last week that was hilarious. I don't know where it is, but it's actually funny because
hopefully it's on that YouTube site.
I think it was on the live. Oh, okay. And the guy was like, well, It's no, I don't forget how he worded it, but he basically said that I was old. And what's it like playing against all these young kids because you're old? And I had to do a double take because I was like, dang, I forgot that I was old. And then he said, you're old enough that some of these guys could be your kid. So I have to set the record straight. Like,
wait, that's not accurate at all.
No, but that's what he told me.
You had a kid when you're like, what, 14, 18?
I was like, oh my gosh, there's a couple kids who are 16 years old in the field or whatever. And I'm like, dang, I don't think that's really that possible. I guess it's kind of possible, but I'm like, I think that I've been playing disc golf a long time. So people think that I'm ancient. I'm 35, which is old for disc golf on the tour. One of the older guys on tour, but I'm here to set the record straight. I don't think I'm old enough to have kids on tour yet. I feel like a dad sometimes with the guys that I travel with, but that I thought that was hilarious. Go check out when he says that to me. I do like this, like, what? What did you just say type thing? It's pretty funny. I don't know what that is. Why people keep, like, they think that I'm a grandpa.
There's this weird idea, and shout out to Edwin. He just pulled Macbeth's The Glow rating 1108. Or Macbeth's The Glow rating was 1108. He has two rounds better than that, including an 1132 at Memorial in 2013. So again, it's this idea, Yuli. Like, there are a lot, like the older players, right? The older players have all kind of disappeared on tour. And I think it's because there is like a new,
oh my gosh,
there is a new culture. There is a new thing going on. A lot of stuff has changed. Even in the small amount of time that I've been playing on the pro tour, which is only a couple years, a lot of stuff has changed. You are someone that's willing to adapt and change and say, hey, stuff's happening. I got to change. There are probably a lot of people that weren't willing to do that, that didn't want to change, that didn't want to adapt. And so they just go away and we don't see them anymore. The people we're seeing on tour right now, again, like 10, 20 years from now, a lot of them will still be playing if they want to. Like that.
Yeah, I 100% agree, because this is fact. I've never been better than I am right now. As I sit here, I'm a better player than I have ever been. And people are like, well, what about back then when you were getting top 10? The fields weren't as good.
You were playing five people.
The players weren't as good. No, the good players weren't as good.
Correct. Yes. There was only five people, and those people weren't even that good.
I was one of those good players.
Yes. Yes.
I was one of those good players, so you can't tell me that the field now isn't better than then.
People forget. Yeah, people forget, like, how, in the grand scheme of things, like, how young disc golf really is.
It's really young.
Like, literally, just, and even in other sports too. Like, look at football. Look at the growth that football, the game of football 20 years ago was a running back game. Like, you had to have a good quarterback to manage the game, but it was all about running the ball. It was all about that. Like, running backs, no one cares about running backs anymore. They are not that important anymore. It's quarterbacks and wide receivers, tight ends. Like, the game has shifted so much. And football is such an older game than disc golf.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's like, the people that are like trying to make these, I don't know. They're trying to make these things. It's like, dude, disc golf is changing so much. Like, so it is changing so much.
The courses are crazy, man. Here, I was having an argument about this with somebody last year, and they were telling me, and I might have mentioned this once on the podcast, but I'll say it again. I had to go back and I looked at scores that I had shot at previous tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
My scores have gotten better. My personal scores. So you look at the total strokes, right? From I think I did it at the MVP Open.
Okay.
And when I took third place, I think my scores were like similar to my 13th place finish that same year. Third place to 13th.
And the course has gotten harder.
Not only are the scores pretty similar, the course is the same holes with almost every single tee pad and every single basket moved farther.
Well, what is it?
Proves my point. Okay, so then USDGC. Before, I think it was last year, not this last year, the year before, I shot 55 the final round, which was my tied for my best score ever at the USDGC. I shot it two times prior in one season. I went back-to-back 55s. I took fourth place that year. Here's the kicker. In that year, it was called the bunker rule, to where there was no OB. You went out of bounds and you played from there.
Mm-hmm.
So we were going after like hole five. We were going over in two. We were throwing as far as we could. It didn't matter where you landed on the right side or wherever. And then you just played across. I think I took a bunker four on that hole and I shot 55. You could go OB wherever you wanted. And that was my previous best score. Then I did it 2 years ago, final round, and the whole course has changed. There's actual OB. The holes are harder. The OB's tighter. They're on every other basket, it's a raised basket. And that just proves my point. I've gotten better over the years, but so has everybody else to an extreme amount. When you're a kid and you see people doing whatever it is, like, you're going to learn to do that better.
Isn't it crazy to think, too, like, when we were growing up, like, watching Tony Hawk do the 900?
So hilarious, dude.
Like, if you go back and watch that now, it looked lame as heck.
1999, I think this is it. 1998 or 1999. One of those years. My brother was a professional BMXer, right? So we would watch the X Games, the dirt jumping. And Ryan Nyquist won the X Games with a final run. There's three jumps. Okay, so you dropped in. He did a 360 drop in, did a 360 on the first one, a 360 on the second one, and a 360 on the big boy. And that won the X Games. A 360 doing it every single time. Dude, you know what they're doing now? They're doing double backflip tail whips.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, ice skating would be an electric one to go back to. Watching like what they're doing, like what they did like 40, 50 years ago in ice skating versus what they're doing now. It's just, again, it's one of those things, like in those type of sports too, right? Like, all it takes is one person to do a trick to where now you see it, now you know it's possible. Yep. That opens the door completely.
Yep.
So that is what
backflip on a motor on in motocross. Then the double backflip. It was like when he did the backflip. I remember watching it and being like, "No way, he's gonna kill himself." You know, like this is crazy to think about.
Like if I would have told you, Yuli, 10 years ago in disc golf, that like, hey, there's gonna be a couple guys, not just a guy. There's gonna be a couple guys that putt like 40%+ from circle two.
Right.
You'd be like, what?
I would be like, no.
Yeah. You're like, that's not happening. Right.
We all know Kit Kat bars taste delicious, but what about how they sound? It's not just a catchy jingle. It's the satisfying crack of breaking off a piece of Kit Kat followed by a crisp crunch. Oh, we forgot one other sound that accompanies Kit Kat bars too. It's... Or maybe it's more like... Altogether, Kit Kat bars are music to our ears and yummy flavors to our mouths. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
It takes someone to do something to open everyone's 100%, 100%. Eyes. So just keep that in mind, guys. Keep that in mind when we're thinking about the growth of disc golf. We're just scratching at the surface here. And speak about the growth of disc golf and someone that's had a huge impact on the growth of disc golf. Nate Doss. I don't know if he listens to the podcast, but not that long ago, we were talking about Nate Doss and saying, I was talking about how I want to see him play.
Yep.
He has now registered for the Beaver State Fling. This will be his first tournament since 2018. Wow.
It's going to be cool, man.
I hope he gets on feature card.
He's gonna.
I hope a bunch of people show up to watch, and I hope he loves it. I hope he gets the itch. I hope he gets that feeling of like competing again and gets back out there. Because again, like the idea to think that Nate Doss is too old to compete is crazy. Sure, are certain tournaments going to be maybe harder for him to compete on than others? Of course. But the way that he can throw mid ranges, control the flight, his angle control, from the stuff that I have seen, he should be able to compete at a lot of tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. That will be exciting. That was cool news to see. We'll definitely have to try to get him on the pod that Tuesday of that tournament. Because I would have load of questions. So what is that? It's like 3 weeks from now. Wait, two Tuesdays from now, right? Yeah,
more than that. More. So we go OTB weekend Portland? Off. Yeah, so we go OTB weekend off Portland, then the Beaver. So it's like a month away.
So it'll be 3 weekends from now.
Yeah.
Okay. So we will definitely try to get him on the podcast because that'll be a fun one to talk to him about. Just like why, like what is this? Just a one off. Because it's kind of in your backyard. We'll see. All right, let's talk about some Edwin stats. He plucked together these stats comparing the season so far of AB and Gannon. So two of the top guys right now in the world in disc golf. Kind of cool to just kind of see a little head-to-head and see where these guys are at. So right now we have AB with 3 wins and Gannon with 1. Average event finish for AB this season has been 5.3. Average event finish for Gannon has been 4.6, so a little bit better actually than AB. Average event score, 21 under. Average event score for Gannon, 22 under. Looking at their statistics here, AB is second in birdie rate. Gannon is first. AB is 8th in fairways hits. Gannon is 5th. Park percentage, AB is first, Gannon is 17th. Greens and circle one greens regulation, AB's 3rd, Gannon 2nd. Greens and regulation circle 2, AB's 2nd, Gannon's 1st. These guys are just crushing these statistics. Jeez.
Yeah, they are.
Scramble, AB's 16, Gannon 8th. C1 putting, AB's 10, Gannon 7. C2 putting, AB 16th, Gannon is 6. This brings up like kind of an interesting thing because like looking at these statistics here, Gannon has played consistently better over the season than AB. And I remember it was, oh my gosh, who's his name? Oh, I can't believe I'm forgetting his name right now. But there was this guy on the PGA Tour, and he was kind of talking about how his ceiling and floor were like too close together. So he was never going to go out there and play terrible, but he also wasn't ever going to go out there and play incredible. And so he like talked to his coach, and his coach was like, we need to get more speed. Like, we need you to hit 10, 15 yards farther off the tee. And he was like, well, yes, like maybe that will reduce your accuracy. Maybe you will spray the ball a little bit more off the tee, but you're not winning the way you're playing right now.
Yeah.
So we got to get more aggressive. And he started increasing his speed, working on speed control, all that stuff. And he ended up winning. He ended up going on and winning. And that's like where it kind of looks like with me and with AB and Gannon. Like AB, when he plays at his best, he's winning. And then he's also, you know, we'll have some finishes down here where Gannon, he's kind of seems like he's like here all the time, but we can't really say too much. Cause it'd be one thing if he was like finishing in 30th all the time, like he's finishing in the top 10, top 5. But he hasn't been able to win as much as AB, even though he has consistently been playing better.
I think we clipped something that I said like a couple of weeks ago where I kind of touched on that a little bit. I said that Gannon's more polished and AB is a little bit rusty in areas. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. and that's just saying that his ceiling, to me, what I think, is higher.
Like if he gets the things that he's like – that he struggles with on, he's like out of control.
Yeah.
Is that what you're kind of saying? Like, yeah, there are a couple areas that he can get really a lot better at. And mm-hmm. so if those areas he's really good at that tournament, he's going to be tough to beat.
Yes.
Where Gannon's kind of like his entire game is kind of,
he's
just
always going to have a chance to win though. I mean, yeah, it's not, that it's is not true. Like he's stuck in like,
that's what I was saying,
17th to 20th. And he's like, okay, I
got to figure out how to break through. Yeah, he's already broken through.
He's up here at the top.
Gannon's kind of having a season similar to Calvin last year.
Similar, yeah, a little bit.
Right? Kind mm-hmm. of similar, where he's just always in the mix, which is surprising because I don't really remember us talking too much about, oh man, Gannon almost won this one. It seems like he maybe has had some like backdoors where like he has a really good final round and jumps a whole bunch of people.
Good point, yeah.
You know, like, I don't really see him like, oh man, Gannon just missed out on winning yet again. Like he just, like, I don't remember seeing him missing a putt down the stretch or throwing OB down the stretch that like knocked him out of contention to win.
If you were to pick one of the two for a finish though, this weekend at OTB, I would put my money on Gannon.
Like just finishing place.
Yeah. Like who's going to finish better.
But if we said who has a better chance of winning, I would go AB. Is that crazy?
But yeah, because the statistics would be like at least Gannon has a shot every single time. Now, if AB plays good, like if we had a crystal ball, I would be like, yeah, is AB going to play good this weekend? And I'd pick AB.
All right. Edwin just said I was correct. Gannon isn't losing the tournaments the last day. He is closing and going from like 10th to second. So that's what I thought is I never really thought he was in the mix. He was just playing really good.
Right.
But yeah, no, that's an interesting question because in my head, I feel like if I had to say, put money down, who's going to win this tournament, I probably put my money on AB. But if you're like, put your money down, who's going to finish higher in this tournament, Gannon or AB?
Yeah.
I would probably pick Gannon.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's weird. I just feel like if AB plays well, he's going to win. If Gannon plays well, he can still get beat.
Which I don't know. Who would you rather be?
That's a fascinating question too. To me, I'd rather be Gannon.
Right. I don't know.
Because then it's like, all right, I just need to figure out what is prohibiting me from winning.
And then do that.
I should just be winning everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe it's crazy because he might just figure it out and then just win them all because he's so close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But AB could get like 6 more wins this year. Who knows? It's awesome with the talent that we have. And Calvin could do the same thing, just all of a sudden make every putt.
Yep. Calvin's been playing great. No wild story of the week, guys. So if you do have a wild story, if you're listening, if you're one of our listeners here on YouTube or on Spotify or on Apple or wherever you are consuming your podcast, send in your wild story.
Nobody sent it in? Or did you not?
No. David looks. He said we've run dry. So we haven't really promoted it in a while, and that's on me. So I apologize. But send in your wild story to wildstorytour@gmail.com. That's wild, WILD, story, STORY, tour, TOUR, @gmail.com. Our intern David will read it through, pass along the good ones to me and Yuli to read right here on the podcast. All right. Normally, Yuli, I ask listener questions on Tour Life, on the Tour Life podcast, Twitter account, Facebook, sometimes on Instagram. Sometimes I tweet out, hey, questions for tonight. I actually want to give the floor here to our loyal Tour Life crew members in the chat, and I'm going to open the floor up. Anything you guys want to ask us, any topics you guys want us to talk about, the floor is yours. Throw them in the chat. Sias would throw it up and we'll talk about it.
While you're doing that, I want to do a little self promotion here.
Please.
These guys right here. How cool is that?
Lobster? That
that's my Captain Skull. Like on my shirt. Yeah. It's like hard.
Wait, I got to make this screen bigger.
Let me go like maybe I can do a different. Oh yeah, this one will probably be better right here. And take that.
Right, I made this screen bigger. Okay, yeah. I was definitely seeing something completely different with that purple
lobster. That'd be a cool stamp too. But these are
Mantises,
and these are going to be dropping on the Discraft website on my store. Yeah. on Thursday. So the zones that we dropped, the merch and everything, it's been awesome. Lots of sales. So I appreciate everybody who's been supporting that. And we have more coming. I mean, this is the coolest stamp I think I've ever had.
Yeah, that stamp is sick, dude. That stamp is sick.
Yeah.
Is that your Yuli logo on the hat too?
Yeah, yeah, on the cap.
That's nasty. Yeah, it's nasty.
And these feel great. They're a little more gummy than the other ones, so they're not crazy stiff.
What is a mantis going to do for those that don't know?
Probably go in the basket.
All right, there you go. You heard it here first.
That's what I threw over there in Europe for that one ace. I'm just kidding. That would be...
That was sick, by the way.
That'd be a complete lie.
The only thing that was missing was someone in a lightsaber in the background celebrating. Edwin Stats wants to know, do you put more value on wins or consistency?
Always wins. I mean, unfortunately, that's not unfortunately, but that's just sports in general.
Yes.
It has to be about wins.
Yeah. If you have someone that won five times and didn't do anything else, and then you had someone that always finished in the top five, no one's going to probably really remember the guy that always finished in the top five and never won.
Right, right.
And if
right.
they do remember him, it's going to be like, oh, you remember that season? That guy couldn't win. That like yeah. That's going to be the thing that sticks around.
A good example is somebody asked me recently on a different podcast, do I think that Jeremy Colling is a better player than me? And I said, yes. And they said, why? And I said, because he's won like five times on the tour. Like he has like five Elite Series wins in a major. So it's like hands down, I can't compete with that.
Yeah, we got to have something to chase. If you look at after.
Like Stat Mando, like I'm ahead of him in every statistical category except for that. You see what I mean? So consistency to me doesn't matter. Like I obviously give him the edge, way more than the edge, because he has four more wins than me and a major championship.
The thing that's interesting too, now that like this is the little Brody after dark, like crazy thoughts I have that pop in my head where I'm just going to say it and without thinking about it, it might be really dumb sounding. But like, if you think about like the NFL, you could have a team win more than another team, but lose to them in the Super Bowl. And they had a worse season.
Like the Patriots and the Giants.
Yeah.
Perfect season. And then
like in that instance, like, certain wins matter way more than other wins.
100%. Yep.
Yeah. So this one is from Thummer Life. Yuli, how was Etu? How was Etu during the final round this weekend? He seemed really poised for 16 years old. Got to get him on Team Discraft somehow.
Oh, he was awesome. I mean, I think there was two 16-year-olds in the top four, which was pretty crazy. And he was amazing. I mean, I didn't say much to him. I kind of kept to myself. I didn't say much to anybody. And, but watching him play, I mean, he's super talented, fearless, great form, poised. Yeah, it was awesome.
Edwin Stat says, does Silas have a drop button to mute Brody if he goes off the rails?
That's a good question.
That is good. That actually is a good question. Silas, do you have anything to cut the stream in case I go crazy?
I wish I had, you know, like a Barstool has like the Minty thing, yes, or like I forget what they call it. But no, I mean, I just can mute you, but there's no like buffer time or anything. Okay. So if you say something stupid, it's going
it's out there for the world. All there. Right. Yep. That's fine. Won't be the first time. Ronnie Baker says, I sent one in that never got read. A wild story. Ronnie, try again. Maybe it never got through the email. I'm not sure. If you send it again and it doesn't get read, then you have to take that up with our intern, David, because that means he's reading it and isn't putting it through to me. I actually don't see the emails. I just see what he pushes through.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear.
Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
Have you heard? Sling TV offers the news you love for less.
Hey, wait, you look and sound just like me.
I am you. I'm the same news programs on Sling TV for less.
You mean you're me, but for less money?
A lot less. I'm all the favorite news programs and more on Sling TV, starting at just $40 a month. Everything great about me, but for less money? Which makes me greater, don't you think? Get the news you love and more for less.
Start saving today. Visit sling.com to see your offer. Sling.
We all know Kit Kat bars taste delicious, but what about how they sound? It's not just a catchy jingle. It's the satisfying crack of breaking off a piece of Kit Kat, followed by a crisp crunch. Oh, we forgot one other sound that accompanies Kit Kat bars, too. It's, or maybe it's more like, altogether, Kit Kat bars are music to our ears and yummy flavors to our mouths. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
Wild story. I got some wild stories. Should I just tell one?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, by all means, tell one. Yeah, let's go.
All right, this is one of the wildest stories that's ever happened to me in disc golf. I was playing at Cass Benton, Michigan. I was there practicing. It's like this little course wraps around this little hill, like woodsy shots or whatever. And at this particular time, I was throwing a bunch of mid ranges on this hole, and I was waiting for the doubles to start, which is, they have a great doubles league with a nice ace pool, and there's like 50 people that go there every single week or whatever. One of the more popular doubles leagues in Michigan. So I'm warming up, and this isn't 2010, 2011 or something, and I'm throwing like a bunch of rocks, and I throw this 8-time rock, which is like one of my favorite rocks back in the day, and they were worth like $200-$300. They were pretty expensive. And I throw this shot, and I see like a group. So the hole that I'm throwing on, there's a group. The groups go behind the hole to go to the next hole, which wraps around into the woods and then comes back to another tee pad, and then you throw around the hill to my left. So I'm going straight, tee pad to my left, and you have to walk behind the hole to get to the holes in the woods. So naturally, I see these guys walk by, and I can't find my rock. And I'm looking everywhere, and I can't find it. So I'm like, oh, well, maybe one of them grabbed my rock and, you know, didn't see me throwing or something, and then kept going or whatever. So I ran back into the woods, and I found them. And I'm like, hey, did you guys pick up a disc? I was throwing a bunch of shots down this hole or whatever, and I can't find my rock. And they're like, oh no, we didn't grab it. Like, whatever. I'm like, okay, go back, look, can't find it, whatever. Start practicing again, figuring if I threw a couple more shots, maybe one would go into the vicinity of where I lost this one. Well, this group comes back around, and I see one of these guys throwing my rock on the tee pad. So I'm like, what the heck? I go over there. Now, mind you, behind me, there's a big hill, and it goes down to where the doubles is held. So there's a bunch of people gathering down there at a picnic table and a bunch of cars. And so you can see up the hill where I am talking to these guys. And I'm like, dude, like, that's my rock. I asked you guys if you guys took it, and you didn't. At the time, like, I was probably, you know, 21, 22, something like that, or maybe even younger. And one of the guys, they were like, obviously college kids. And one of them goes, well, you have an option. You can leave, or we're going to take the rest of your discs. And I didn't realize it, but somebody had walked behind me and then grabbed me. So I get jumped by these dudes. So I'm scrapping with these guys. And this is where, this is crazy already, but this is where it gets even nuts. They're like trying to hit me. And I'm like scrapping with these guys trying to get away. And I hear a guy yelling, running up the hill. And so I like notice, and it's a cop. So there's a cop running up the hill to us. And he's like more of a heavy set cop. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, thank goodness. Like, I'm not going to die. Like, this is awesome. So we all stop as this cop's running up the hill. And it's like a slow run. And then he finally like gets up to us and tackles me.
Oh no! He got the wrong guy.
He tackles me. Boom! I go down, and he like rolls because he's like kind of a bigger guy, like I said. And he like rolls over to the side, and I like get up. I'm like, dude, what the heck are you doing? At this point, a couple other people had run up the hill, and they're like, what are you doing? Like, he got attacked by these guys. And the one guy looks at me, who had grabbed me from behind, smiles, grabs my disc, and takes off running and gets away with my disc. So then I'm stuck there with this cop, and I have to like explain myself. I'm like, dude, I just got jumped by these guys. They stole my disc or whatever. That was the craziest thing that's ever happened to me right there.
Did he end up getting those guys? Or like what?
Two of them, yes. Two of them he did. But one of them, like,
why did they jump you? Just because they were, you have any idea? They're crazy.
Yeah, they were a-holes, man. I don't know. Oh my
gosh.
But that now, like, I go back to Cass Benton because I would go back there every year, and at the doubles, like, they would all make fun of me.
Oh gosh!
To this day, like, they just still talk about me getting jumped at Cass Benton. But that's one of the craziest things that's ever happened to me in my life. The guy got away with my disc, though.
Yeah, not just a crazy disc golf story, just a crazy like life story.
I'll never forget it. It was the slowest run I've ever seen from anybody, and he didn't stop. And I'm like, "What is this guy doing?" And he just tackles me. Like we had stopped scrapping for 15 seconds, and we're just watching this guy slow run up the hill. I just get speared by this dude.
Anyway. I've never been jumped, thankfully. The craziest thing I've seen, like physical like that out in the wild, was at a club in Gainesville. And I think something like of like, hey, that dude's hitting on your girl, or that guy was talking. Yeah, one of those things to a really drunk guy. And he just went up to this guy that's like, you know, he went up to him. The guy's facing this way, right? And he's coming up here from his peripheral. And I mean, he just laid a punch right on the jaw. Oh. And the guy just crumpled. And I was like,
folded.
I was like, oh my.
It's a weird thing to see in real life in the wild. Like you said.
Yeah, when you see something like I watch a lot of fighting, but like in boxing and MMA, it's like you're kind of expecting it. But like when that stuff happens out in the wild, you're just like, oh my. And the scary part about that too is like we're like on marble, we're like on like granite or you know, hardwood floors. We're on something to where if that like guy falls the wrong way, like that could be like murder.
Oh, for sure.
Kill someone.
Yeah.
If they slam and hit their head like that.
Well, and what people don't understand too is like, if you get cold clock like that, like, and you haven't trained to take punches, you haven't trained, like your muscles aren't made for that, right? Like if you're fighting and you're a professional fighter, like part of training is getting hit and like making sure that your muscles and like your neck can withstand that, because
you're also probably used to it too, right? Yeah. You're more used to it.
Like that's not good, dude. You could totally hurt somebody really bad.
It's crazy.
What other questions we got in the chat?
People have been wanting you to come on debate night.
Okay.
Really want you to come on debate night. We filmed that before this show, actually. So we film it in 2 hours before the show. So this show starts at 8. We film at 6 Eastern. From 6 to 7. Gary is a very, very, very good debater. He is a fan favorite for sure. And he wants to go head toes. He's in the chat right now. He's saying he wants to go head toes to toe against you. So
you don't want him. I feel like my calling is sports for sure, but I for sure could have been a lawyer.
Oh,
without a doubt.
All right. You'd be perfect for the show then. Absolute perfect for the show. So we'll get you on at some point for sure. Silas, you ever going to get on debate night? You're going to throw it around with the boys?
I don't know, man. If there's something that I'm super passionate about, then you know, I might have to hop on there, but I mean, It gets intense, man.
We might need like a little Silas segment where you just pop on and just let go of a hot take for 30 seconds every week.
I know. Yeah, I don't have a ton of those, but I could get fired up about.
Well, we can't even hear your hot take because you're muted.
Oh,
yeah,
what?
Maybe he's not the guy.
I was gonna
say, we didn't hear any of that.
Oh my gosh!
You have to say it again.
I was gonna say I don't have a ton of hot takes, but you get me fired up about the right thing, and I'll spit some fire.
Yeah, we saw that with the coverage situation, live coverage. So, all right, I don't think we got any more questions, Yuli. Edwin Early Trivia. Who won this week's Edwin Early Trivia? If you guys don't know, jump in, become a Tour Life crew member about 10, 15 minutes before the show starts. Edwin Stats, who does all our statistics here on Tour Life, he's in the chat. He poses a question. The first to answer the question gets to win a disc every week. So shout out to Doc. Doc Ooh. Takes it down. Very nice, Doc.
Nice, Doc.
Oh, yes. Okay. Edwin's going to pose us the question. Let's see if we can get it, Yuli.
Okay.
I wonder if he lets people Google the answers. I mean, I guess you can't if someone knows it off the dome. He said, hey, updated the 2024 MPO leaders today. Okay. Brian said he got his Tour Life Raptor in the mail. Let's go, Brian. Appreciate it.
Love that.
There are four players that are in the top 10 for both Circle 1X and Circle 2 putting. Name two of them. Are we putting you in there? Do you think you're there for Circle 2?
No. What do you mean for Circle 2 as far as like, for putting in general?
You're number one in Yuli, or you're number one in Circle 1. Okay, he said hint. Yuli is leading in Circle 1, but not Circle 2. Oh, he's leading in Circle 1, but not Circle 2. I think you're still in there. No. You don't think you're a top 10 Circle 2 putter?
I don't think so.
Okay, I think we both can say Andrew Marweed.
Andrew Marweed, James Proctor.
Gannon Burr.
And Ezra Robinson.
I would not put Ezra in there. I would go with...
I know it's James Proctor. I know it's might be Calvin. No, could be Calvin.
Gannon's not in there. Burr and Proctor were correct. All right, who are the other two? Marweed's not in there either. Oh wow. Okay.
Wow.
It's definitely not Calvin. He had.
Well, could be AB then? Didn't he say he was like?
No, AB's too low in Circle One.
Didn't he just say the stats were
AB's 17th, I think, in Circle 1X.
Okay.
Yeah. It's got to be like someone. Ricky?
Matt Bell?
Give me Ricky.
Matt Bell? He's always
Matt high. Bell and Ricky. Marwee was 36 in Circle 2. Oh, man. All right, I think we got both of them. Ricky and Bell. Boom. Teamwork. High five.
Really nice.
Bam.
Ask him what I am in Circle 2 because I have no clue. But I know it's last year I was like 17%. It was horrible.
Do you think you're in the top 30?
That would be nice. It's gotten better this year. I know that.
Well, that's good. While he's pulling that, Silas, can you give us our Tour Life merch update?
Tour Life merch update is we are... Oh, can you still hear me?
Yep.
I can hear you. We can't see you, though.
It's whatever. we're at 437 pieces of merch sold. So we're sneaking up to that 450, 500 range, which is insane.
450 would be nice. 450 would be nice. We're not even saying grip locked anymore. They're just too far down.
It's
a slaughter fest.
Yeah, it's... We won't talk about it.
You're trash at Circle 2. You're 22.4% 72nd.
Yeah, that's up from last year, though. That's good.
That is up. So would you say we're 17 away from 450?
We're at 437. So what is that, 23? 13?
13. We're 13 there away. 13 away. Let's get to 450 by next week, folks. Go over to foundationdisc.com, type in Tour Life, and pick up some merch. We got hats, we got hoodies, we got shirts, we've got discs. We've got it all over there at foundationdisc.com. Go pick it up. Let's get to 450 by next episode. That would be a nice little milestone to hit.
Yeah, it would. Oh, very nice. Just guess what? A lot of fans over there in Denmark for Tour Life. A lot of fans.
Oh, a lot of listeners.
A lot of listeners. Had a lot of people come up to me and say that they love the podcast. And hey, man, we appreciate that. So shout out to our people overseas who are doing that. And another shout out. Talked to my mom before this show. She said, hey, give me a thumbs up when you're on the show. It was Mother's Day on Sunday.
Yes.
So happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there.
To all the mothers out there, even Corgi moms out there. Happy Mother's Day to everyone. All right. It was a quick show tonight, guys. We didn't even hit 2 hours. Normally we're like 2.5 hours normal show, but a quick show off week. Next week, guarantee we're going to have a lot to talk about. We're going to be going out to OTB to start the West Coast tour, folks. It's going to be juicy. It's going to be fun. Hopefully everyone finishes and no one DNFs. If they do, we'll talk about it right here on Tour Life next week. Y'all have a good week. Until then, we'll see you next time.
We all know Kit Kat bars taste delicious, but what about how they sound? It's not just a catchy jingle. It's the satisfying crack of breaking off a piece of Kit Kat, followed by a crisp crunch. Oh, we forgot one other sound that accompanies Kit Kat bars, too. It's... or maybe it's more like... altogether, Kit Kat bars are music to our ears and yummy flavors to our mouths. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/brainstorm now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more brainstorming tools like private mode and voting. That's Miro.com/brainstorm now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.